What turns on a killer is the suffering and death of another human being. And as his determination builds to take another life, he plans in obsessive detail what props he'll bring, what knots he'll tie. Let me ask you guys something. What turns you on?
Welcome to Canvas and Crime, your ultimate destination for true crime and horror merchandise. Meet Elizabeth, the creative force behind canvasandcrime.com. She combined her passion for painting with her fascination for true crime and horror, giving birth to this unique shop.
You're looking for an intelligent white male, 20 to 30 years old, socially functional.
Are you a fan of serial killer memorabilia? You're in luck. Canvas and Crime has an incredible selection, from iconic mugs featuring notorious figures like Ted Bundy and the Zodiac Killer, to killer shot glass sets that showcase your favorite serial killers.
All I know to do is change your locks, tighten up your security, and pray.
But that's not all. You can also find custom prints of your most loved serial killer, adding a personal touch to your collection. For the most entertaining serial killer merchandise, look no further than canvasandcrime.com. Support a small business and dive into the chilling fun. Shop today, and don't forget to follow Canvas and Crime on YouTube as well.
Are you intrigued by conspiracy theories and the strange, dark, and mysterious? If so, we invite you to subscribe to our new podcast, The Truth Behind the Lies, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Do you love podcasts and classic television? Do you want to listen to Secrets Uncovered, the Truth Behind the Lies podcast and Rant Radio, completely ad-free? At Limitless Broadcasting Network, we bring you all your favorites like The Carol Burnett Show, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and I Love Lucy without any interruptions. For just $7 a month and $80 a year, you can unlock over 90 hours of quality television and podcast programming. Don't miss out. Subscribe today at limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com, where endless entertainment awaits.
We have 9/11. It kind of reminds me of when Pearl Harbor happened. Or because that was, the president knew Pearl Harbor was going to happen before it happened. And it was just an excuse for us to get into the war. Just like
they knew that these planes were going to be hijacked well before they were hijacked.
Right. And people,
I'm not so sure
the government that. And but they would get in trouble or they would get arrested if they tried to stop it.
Well, because they needed it.
Right.
And they're, you know, I personally, could they have put those planes into the buildings? Absolutely. Do I believe the planes are what brought down the buildings? I do not. Do I think that there was something else added to these planes as they went in? Most likely. Or did they have, you know, directed energy strikes? Did they have missiles? Did they have bombs implanted in the planes as they were flown in? I think most of the passengers on these planes were incapacitated. There were reports. I can't remember which plane it was. This lady got a phone call out. And she said there was gas coming out of the vents. She was trying to call her husband, and she was talking about there was gas coming out of the vents and people were falling unconscious. So,
we can find that. I never heard that.
You didn't hear about that one?
No, I did not hear about that. Tell me more about that.
That was covered on Alex Jones's show.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's the king of covering the 9/11 conspiracies and stuff.
It's hard to find these days.
I think a lot of the 9/11 stuff
has been scrubbed out.
Absolutely. Just looking up stuff for this episode, you find a lot of debunked conspiracy theories. You can't really find anything that actually shows you a spot for true conspiracy theories. It'll give you a list, but it'll tell you the debunked.
Right.
You know.
Right. No, I agree 100%. Looking up this, trying to figure out like what's A to B, when the president knew stuff, when he didn't know stuff, just how the buildings fell. Well, I was watching a video. Demolition. It was steel can't melt, and don't you remember?
Steel can melt, but not at that temperature.
So at a certain temperature, it will melt. But like when the plane hit it and they were like, all this fuel helped it melt. That's not true. It's not hot enough.
But they said that it got hot enough to weaken the steel. Okay, I'll give you that. If it weakened with the winds, it doesn't matter how calm a day it is. The wind that those buildings have hitting it at all times.
Oh, for sure.
If it weakened, it would have collapsed like that.
Right.
And it would have taken out all kinds of people in building. Right. It wouldn't have come down.
It's going to collapse to the side since people can't see you. So it's going to collapse to the side.
It wouldn't have pancaked like that. You know what I'm saying? It wouldn't have come like
straight down. It would have collapsed to the side.
Right. So I don't buy it. I never have. And most of the people who have heard these stories or were around during it don't believe it either.
Right.
Well, it doesn't matter. You can prove any theory. If you throw enough money at it and find the right people to scream about it, you can prove any side of your story.
Absolutely. And
I believe that they have just found, you know, quack scientists who say that, you know, the planes themselves were the ones that took down the buildings. You
right.
know what I mean? Like the jet fuel and the paper and cardboard, whatever else was inside there, was enough to bring down those buildings.
Right. Are you fighting with your dog?
I am.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Is she trying to play with you?
While I'm on, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what my dogs try to do. So 9/11, what do you think their agenda was? Do you think it was overall the Patriot Act and then going into Baghdad?
I think it was a multi-faceted plan. I think that in order to get everybody on board with being able to do such a...
So you needed something to happen.
In order to do some kind of attack like that and to get people on... Because, I mean, we're talking about a domestic attack.
Right.
A very large domestic attack. We're not just talking about the Twin Towers. We're talking about putting the Pentagon into it. And then the other plane that went over, what was it, Pennsylvania that went down?
Yeah, there were supposed to be like four planes.
Yep.
One went over Pennsylvania. One was going, and then they said a plane hit the Pentagon.
Yep.
But did you hear the reporter say, there's no plane here? There's nothing. There's no somebody plane there. Live and on plus, here saying that.
The hole where the plane supposedly went into the Pentagon was too small.
Right.
It's too small. There's no way that a Boeing 747 would have made that small of an impact.
Right.
Plus, we're talking about DC. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You mean the restricted airfields there are in DC?
If you come within a certain amount of miles, they'll shoot you down, regardless if you're a commercial airline or not.
Right.
You're getting shot down.
Absolutely.
So you're telling me a commercial plane made it that far without fighter jets being scrambled and being right alongside that thing and taking it down if they had to? No. Give me a break.
Somebody should have known about this. Like you
everybody
can't
knew about far. It. We're talking about radar.
Right.
Just radar. Just primitive radar. Damn plane when it was 300-400 miles away from it. They knew the trajectory it was on. They knew exactly where it was going.
Why do you think they didn't do that? Why did scramble jets and shot it down?
They did. I'm sure they did. That plane didn't hit the Pentagon. They used that as a distraction.
As a distraction for something else.
And had a missile strike that hit the Pentagon. That's the only thing that could have moved fast enough and create that kind of damage and get past our defenses and do the damage it did to the Pentagon. They used a smart bomb, a smart missile that went in there and just, boom, took it out. That was it.
Do you remember right after 9/11, any cameras, like any buildings, like if you're a 7-Eleven and you had a camera facing in there,
it's all confiscated.
Yeah, they went in there and confiscated all the video right after the attack.
Right.
And they did it to every store.
Yes, they did.
Why would they do that? Because they want something covered up.
They're afraid of what people might see or what might get released. And during that time period, you know, our technology wasn't what it is. There was no way to instantly share it.
Right.
Today, you could there's no way you could get away with
Facebook.
That. Right.
What was the poppin' social media platform back then? I don't even think we had one yet.
MySpace?
I think it was MySpace. Yeah. But I don't even think people were sharing this on MySpace.
No, there really wasn't much. Nobody was doing that kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
I mean, your cell phones, we still had, you know, one button scroll through your letters on top of the number to try and send a text.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, yeah, that was a different time period.
It's been confirmed that MySpace was the key social media back in those days. So thank you for the confirmation, Samantha. So I got a text. She was like, oh, it's MySpace.
Yep.
So can you imagine being in the building at this time? And like the people that were there.
Oh, yeah.
They were just like hopping out of the windows. What do you think their last thought was? Like, I'm going to die
one way or another. I'm going to die. So I'm going to go at my hands. Either I'm going to burn alive or I'm going to.
I'm assuming that's why people jumped.
Yep.
Because the fire was so. So it went into like the first plane got hit like the 52nd floor or the 60th floor. And the other plane hit like.
Well, see, the here's 25th the thing.
Floor.
I don't. There wasn't really fire. You can watch any videos of that at all. You see some smoke,
right?
Because there is a little bit, but it's not like it was a roaring, you know, fire that was stopping people from getting out. Those planes hit stairwells. They hit elevators and stairwells. They block off those damn they blocked off the exit, so all those people were trapped.
Right. So before the actual attacks happened, I hear they were working on the elevators with armed guards around them, like days before it happened. And people are like, that's weird. Why do these technicians need all these armed guards around them? Why are they working?
So they could disable all the methods of escape for all these people.
Right.
You know, you can take down a building, but if you know, it's a tragedy if the building goes down, but it is a true disaster if the loss of human life is enormous.
Right.
You know, and what that's why
they want as much loss of life that day. Almost 3,000 people were killed.
Human life means nothing to these people.
Absolutely not. Nothing. We're both expendable. Highly expendable.
It's not just us both. It's everybody on this planet. There are the haves, and then there are the have-nots. They believe that they are entitled to everything, and we are the serfs. You know, we are the ones that if you know that expression, in order to make an omelet, you have to break a few eggs. We're their eggs, and they don't care how many eggs they break. I mean, they just don't. That's where human resources comes from. You know,
right.
We're just a resource.
Right. You know?
We're the dumb breeders. You know what I mean? So.
Right. Right. No,
that's the way they look at us.
People in the building on 9/11, the people that got out, they kept saying they heard pops, pop, 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 pop.
Uh-huh.
Before like big explosions happen.
Yeah. It's the explosions. It was the explosives going off, getting ready to detonate the building so it could drop, taking out the support beams.
It happens to
any demolition.
If you look at like when they tore down the Wynn or the Stardust from the casino out in Vegas, it went down the same way the towers went down.
Yeah,
same identical thing. And then they say, no, a plane did this.
Nope. There's no way. And I mean, anybody who's a rational thinker, I mean, you don't even have to be the smartest person on the planet. If you just look at it logically.
Right.
There's no way, no way that that makes sense to you. It doesn't matter how many times this is the definition of gaslighting. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And people that actually believe that this happened, I mean, I believe the tragedy happened. I believe the disaster happened.
Right.
That is not, but it's the method that they used to create this disaster.
Right.
And they did it to us. And our own government was complicit in doing this.
Well, it's not the first time the government has been complicit to do things like.
No, not at all.
In Cuba, they were trying to get us into war in Cuba. They were thinking about hijacking some bus and like. Killing a bunch of people and saying the Cubans did it. And that would have got us to go out to war with Fidel Castro.
Yep.
But for some reason, that didn't happen. Pearl Harbor was an inside job. They knew exactly when the bombs were going to be. I mean, that's confirmed to this day. What else? I mean, the list can go on and on. It kind of reminds me of what we did to the Indians. We were friends with them. And then we gave them all these blankets full of smallpox and everything. And we just wanted their land.
Right.
And so it's kind of something like that.
100% it is.
So what do you think the outcome has been from all this?
The Gulf of Tonkin. That was another one that got us into Vietnam.
Explain that one for the viewers.
For the viewers, Gulf of Tonkin?
Yeah.
It was a, let's see. Get it right. It's where the United States forces were carrying out covert amphibious operations on the North Vietnamese, and they were blaming it on others to get us into it.
Okay.
To get our involvement in Vietnam, because we were trying to stay out of it.
Right, we were trying to stay neutral.
Yep.
It was kind of
the same with World War II, you know? We were staying out of that one.
I agree.
Pearl Harbor hit, and we were in the war.
Yeah. And that they knew exactly if that happened, there would be an outcry of support. And then Americans, have you ever noticed if something happens to this country, we come together, Americans come together and want to fight.
Yeah.
That's one thing that they weren't counting on, especially with 9/11. The unity of being an American was so strong, especially after it went down. Oh, I'm a proud American, and everybody hanging up their flags. They counted on that.
They knew that. They knew that was going to happen. They knew that that was the perfect. They use predictive programming. They know exactly what it takes to push people to get the desired reaction that they want. They knew exactly what to do to get us right where they wanted us. We hook, line, and sinker agreed to the Patriot Act.
Oh, absolutely. You know what I mean? We begged for it.
We had that security now, but we gave up all kinds of liberties for it.
They can legally spy on us without warrants. Yeah, they can enter our property without warrants. If they think you're a terrorist, they can hold you indefinitely without going to court because of the Patriot Act.
Well, you got to really read these things because they can't just do this stuff, but it's real easy to classify you as something. It's real easy. I mean, you'd be surprised how loosely they use domestic terror. You know what I mean? They can put that title on anybody basically.
Well,
because it doesn't take very much to be called a domestic terrorist because all you are is
ties into the 9/11 as well.
Ish. Yes. He found out the truth about what was going on with the country, and then he decided he was going to do some rectification for it.
And that's how, right.
But, I mean, that's one version of it. The other version is he was an MK Ultra.
True.
You know, he was, what's the word I'm looking for? He was a
Manchurian candidate?
Well, under MK Ultra,
you can.
He go was one of the. They just used that kind of mind control programming, round him up, sent him in there, and let him do his thing. I mean, he was the perfect patsy for it.
Right. We definitely should do an episode on the Oklahoma City bombing because that indirectly ties into all of this. We'll see what you think.
Right.
There's so many, like all these conspiracies are so convoluted. They're all interconnected.
Well, the problem with 9/11 was that so many people died for
greed.
It was greed. I mean,
it was over greed.
It was greed for some. It was over power control and, you know, the ability to spy on us all by some. It was over a family's, you know, butthurt philosophies, you know, that they wanted to get in there and get their name back, you know. Mm-hmm. But also there were items in Iraq that other power structures wanted control of.
Right.
You know, Iraq is supposedly... you know, had a working Stargate, and whoever has control of those Stargates has control of a lot of things. That's interdimensional travel right there.
Right.
Not to mention all the antiquities that proved where civilization began and where we came from. And the truth behind the Anunnaki. And
yeah, that's exactly right. You're talking about the Anunnaki.
And those who control that kind of stuff control the true power. I mean, greed and family vendettas and things like that, that's minor stuff. But it's when you get into the real things, the beginning of our species, you know?
Right.
Controlling the actual
world.
Controlling the implements that help these interdimensional beings go back and forth, you know?
Right.
That's a pretty profound power to have control of, and to have a working one. And I've heard that it's not the only working one, and there's a few of them in the world.
Where would be another one?
That was an easy one for us to get to, because it was already in a conflict area, so that was easy for us to get to.
Was that in the green zone?
Do what?
Was that in the green zone? I feel like it was. I feel like they made a movie that it was like looking for weapons of mass destruction, and they cleared it. But the reason why they went in there was because of the Stargate.
Oh, well, they've made movies about all kinds of stuff like that. But the only weapons of mass destruction were what was found in these libraries and in these museums, and the true information, you know, because the things that were there could have destroyed religion
and brought it down to his knees.
Religion is the main way to control the population.
Right.
I mean, they've been doing it for a millennia. So if you could topple religions by uncovering what was actually documented in their, you know, physically there, just needing to be shown to people, they're never going to let that out.
You know, absolutely, what I mean?
There's no way. The churches make too much money and have too much control over people. And can you imagine what would happen to people if they were to find out that, you know, their belief system isn't exactly what they think it is? And I'm not here to argue theology with anybody like that. I mean, believe what you want to. That's a great thing about this world. You can believe anything you want. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, there are those who believe in that. What is it? The flying spaghetti monster thing. So
you lost me on that. This flying spaghetti monster. What's that?
What are they? Pastafarians?
I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see.
We don't know.
Yeah, Pastafarianism, also known as the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
I'm saying
you can believe in whatever you want.
Right, right.
But if there is proof of the origin, you know, the origination of our species in the Middle East, you know,
they're never going to let that out.
That's not going to be something that is ever going to see the light of day.
Absolutely not.
Not just that's like when they went to Egypt. Every time there's a major archaeological find in Egypt, the governments go in there first.
Right.
And they see what's there before it's allowed to be released to any museum or anywhere like that. Smithsonian is controlled by the government.
And it's very
Have so much stuff that'll never be seen by anybody.
Just like the Vatican does too.
The Vatican's archives are books.
I hear they have a working time machine that they can look into the past. They have goggles that you look in and you can see the past and what happened. And it's at the Vatican. They have things sealed off that they'll never bring up. You know?
I do know what you're talking about.
That came out couple years ago. A whistleblower came out and was like, yeah, there's a working time machine there. I can't remember what it's actually called.
Chronovisor.
Yes.
The chronovisor.
That you could look in the past.
Well, I'm not saying they do and I'm not saying they don't, but if they go through such trouble to debunk and make sure that we don't ever get the chance to see any of these things, you know, it makes me think that maybe there's some truth to it.
So you don't ever think there'll be a time where all this stuff, it just comes out and says, yep, aliens are real. Everything that we've came out and said is a lie. There's people on Mars. Well, we have bases on Mars. All this.
They're working on. I mean, there are some things that are coming out that they have to. It's just getting too hard to control. The way the genie is almost out of the bottle and they can't put it back in. They're starting to have to extraterrestrials. They're slowly starting to admit.
They're there. They're real.
They've told us for 100 years that, you know, there's no such thing as aliens. You know, don't believe this. Don't believe that. If they go back and completely say, you know what, hey, we lied to you. This is what we found. This is what's here. They lose all credibility. People will be in an uproar. Right. There's too many people that are too invested in it. You still have a large majority of the public that will believe hook, line, and sinker whatever the government tells them. And even the ones that do question a little bit are still in the back of their mind like, well, no, there's no way they would actually lie to us, you know, because they're our government. They're for us, you know, and we get new people in there. So how could they pop? Because everybody has a way to be controlled. Right. It doesn't matter who you are. If you make it into politics, they've got a way to control you. They're going to find a way to control you. They're going to find some way to gather incriminating evidence or get you in a compromising scenario.
Something. Everybody can be blackmailed.
And you are going to be under their control. And for most people, it's money. There's no way that these people go into public office, you know, barely rubbing two nickels together and coming out multimillionaires. Right. You know what I mean? Because
they're being paid to keep their mouth shut.
Well, not necessarily mouth shut. It's to push whatever line they want. Or it doesn't matter if it's pushing that, you know, 9/11 was, you know, a terroristic operation, and it was buildings were brought down by planes, and Building 7 was brought down by, you know, a piece of paper was on fire and caught the right draft and blew through the window and came down. You know, it started. Who knows?
What did they
can always find somebody to do that.
What did they say about Building 7 and why it came down?
They obfuscated that one. They never really gave anything.
But people just filled in the blanks and they were like, well, obviously something happened.
Yeah.
Nobody pushed that topic.
It was pushed, but it wasn't pushed on. If it was pushed on like the news or something like that, it was always shifted to another topic real quick.
Right.
You were always cut off. You were always spoken over, you know. Nothing was ever, the only time it was ever talked about or pushed was through, you know, a conspiracy related show or somebody who was trying to bring upon a different topic or different narrative. Viewpoint. Yeah.
Right.
So,
but they would always make that person look crazy because they're just like, this can't be real. This is what the government said has happened. But if you look at the cold hard facts, it just doesn't add up.
Well, and that was the thing with Alex Jones. I mean, Alex Jones has a lot of very, very good information on these topics. He put in a lot of legwork on it. Problem is, he's a very eccentric person, and he got wrapped up. You know what I mean? He gave him an inch to run on with him being crazy, and it discounted everything he all the true things he brought up before. But this guy.
Subscribe now to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com to finish listening to the episode ad-free.
You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
Hey, this is Andre Gower from the Monster Squad, and you are listening to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast.
Door creaks open, static on the screen. Pop that corn, cue the scream.
Hey guys, welcome back to You Can't Kill the Boogeyman podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Robbie.
And I'm Sammy.
And today we are talking about a new movie that just hit the market, hit the ground running. All the shows so far have been sold out.
Very popular.
This particular director is actually coming from YouTube. And if you don't know what we're talking about, or if you've been under a rock lately, we are talking about Obsession.
Yep.
We saw it last night. Before we actually jump into this, if you want to listen to celebrity interviews from our show, like you want to watch the video and whatnot, make sure you head over to limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com and subscribe. Mm-hmm. We got people from the Monster Squad. We got Daniel Harris.
Yep.
We're going to be getting Scout here soon. We got a lot of people. We got Doug Jones. Mm-hmm. We got Miko Hughes. And the list is growing.
Yeah. Tyler Mayne.
Tyler Mayne. Exactly. So more and more, we're getting them.
Ryan and Andre.
Yep.
Yeah.
So please subscribe now. You get streaming television shows and all of our podcasts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So again, we are talking about the movie Obsession.
Yes. All right. So we'll start with the cast, characters, and then the box office numbers.
Okay.
So this stars Michael Johnston as Baron, aka known as Bear Bailey. And he is a music store employee who has an unconfessed crush, which kicks off this entire supernatural nightmare that the movie is based on. Our next character is Nikki Freeman, and she is played by Indy Navarrete, and she's Bear's coworker, and this is who Bear has a crush on at the beginning of the film. And yeah, her life becomes very different.
Very different.
In this movie. Cooper Tomlinson is Ian, and Ian is, and all of these people work at the store, same store. He's just one of the friend group. He's like Bear's best friend.
Yeah.
Basically. And Cooper will be at Scared Ice in October. So just letting you know, in case you're.
And so is Ian. Ian will be at Scared Ice as well.
Cooper is Ian.
Oh, so I'm sorry.
That's who
yes.
You're talking about.
Yes.
Megan Lawless plays Sarah Harper. She will also be at Scared Ice. That's in October.
That's who I thought you were talking about. No. My bad.
Yeah, I hadn't gotten to her yet. So she's another one of the friend group. She seems to have a crush on Bear. We don't ever get to actually find out for sure, like 100%, but it seems like she does.
Right.
Also, Andy Richter is in this. He's Carter Harper. So he's the father to Sarah and owns the store, like the music store where they all work.
He was in it for like 2.5 seconds.
He makes a few brief cameos.
When you're watching it and you're just like, is Andy Richter there?
It's Andy Richter.
They probably paid him scale to come down and shoot his lines. And he probably shot it in a day or something.
He made it. So the estimated production budget is $750,000. And the director, Curry Barker, shot the entire film with this shoestring budget. But the buzz was so intense that Focus Features paid $14 or $15 million to acquire the distribution rights.
So it was $750,000 for the budget. Mm-hmm. That means they allocated another $750,000 for marketing. Probably more since they allocated, they bought it for so much.
Yeah, I mean, Focus Features, put a lot into the marketing.
Yeah, P&Ls and everything like that.
Yeah.
We're talking about marketing now. There's two different budgets. You have your production budget and your marketing budget when you shoot a movie. If you want to get it out there, you got to buy clicks. You got to buy TikTok. You got to do
that's why you see the ads. Yeah, I see a lot of these ads on TikTok, especially Instagram, but a lot of TikTok ads for sure.
You want to get in hands of influencers and everything to make your movie pop.
And they put it in the Toronto International Film Festival. So that's where it first was released. So it got buzz there, too.
Okay.
So global box office numbers as of now, $224.8 million worldwide. So it's made a lot of money. That's like 10,000% profit. Like, it's insane.
Well, the guy that produced this, he can now officially do whatever he wants in Hollywood.
For at least a little while. And this has officially become Focus Features' highest grossing film of all time. And it's the 9th highest grossing movie overall in 2026.
Wow.
So, yeah. Look at that. So let's get into the actual story. So, and, you know, right now it's sitting at a 95% rating from critics on Rotten Tomatoes. So everybody likes this. Audiences, critics, whoever. Just so you know. It's written and directed and edited, actually, by Curry Barker, who you may know from his internet hit Milk and Cereal on YouTube. We have not checked that out yet, but that was a big thing. And Jason Blum is the executive producer of the film.
Okay. I think he did this and Backrooms. That's another.
Jason Blum?
Jason Blum.
Oh, yeah. Really? Backrooms is theirs too? I didn't know that. Backrooms is out now too. We haven't seen that one yet. So basically, the story follows Bear, like we said, the main character, who, you know, he's really shy. He has this crush on his friend Nikki, and he's trying to tell her, but he's really nervous to do it and kind of getting some maybe not great advice from his friend Ian about how or where to do it.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And he talks to Nikki on the phone this night when everything starts. And Nikki mentions that she lost the crystal necklace that she was wearing. Like it fell down the drain or something, I think. And so he goes out before he meets them out at the bar and he's shopping for a gift for her. And he's going to get her a new necklace, but he decides not to get it. So instead he buys something called a One Wish Willow, which is a novelty stick toy that claims to grant one wish per person when you snap it. So basically, Bear just fucks up. Like, he doesn't really actually tell her anything about how he feels. He has the perfect opportunity because she basically asks him.
Flat out. And, you have feelings for me. And yeah, he pusses out.
And he just doesn't admit to it. She talks to him about their other friend, Sarah. It's like a whole thing. And he doesn't admit it. So he ends up, he's sitting in the car outside of Nikki's house. And he makes a wish for Nikki to like love him more than anybody else. Something like that. This is the way he words it. And yeah, things get really weird right then and there.
Absolutely.
Nikki very creepily comes back out of her house and is back and forth with talking to him and just acting really strange.
It was,
you know, it's a bizarre interaction.
It was like it was a beginning of a possession.
Yes. Yeah, because Bear gets exactly what he wished for. So Nikki becomes obsessed with him and professes her love for him and basically moves into his house.
Yeah, like overnight. She's like, oh, I'm just going to move in here. I like your house.
Yes.
I'm just going to move in.
Yeah, and he basically has fucked her up. Like, the real Nikki can no longer control her body.
It's like she was possessed. Yes. And the real Nikki is now in purgatory.
Yeah, like trapped inside of her own mind or something and can't get out except for little glimpses.
Right.
Where she manages to escape. So crazy Nikki is obsessive. She cries, screams at him. She's like 1,000% a stalker at this point in time. She's violent. She snaps. She does weird shit all day, like getting up in the middle of the night and just staring at him in the corner. Yeah.
And he's like, will you come back to bed? And she's like, no.
I just want to watch you sleep. And he's like, could you not be weird?
Could you not do that? That's super weird.
Yeah.
Honestly, this girl creeped me out. I was like,
she did
a phenomenal job, but I would have been, yes, like, I would have never let this girl know where I lived.
Yes, she did a really a really great job. I mean, like, it's just from the very beginning, you know, she goes from being normal, like literally snap your fingers, and she starts being super creepy.
Super creepy.
Just from the jump. And he's like, oh, you're being weird, but doesn't really, I don't know, he doesn't question enough, I think, the fact that all of a sudden she's like, let's go back to your house.
Well, he Googles, you know, does this one tree wish work?
One wish willow.
One wish willow work.
Yeah.
And people are like going back. It's like their own little Reddit page. Yes, no, yes, no. And then he's like, oh, clearly it doesn't work. He comes to this conclusion like it doesn't work. But yeah, clearly,
she just magically decided she's into him, even though he didn't even tell her.
Right.
How he really felt. Yeah. And it's just like, even the next day they show up to work together and he's telling Ian like, oh, it was really weird last night. And the whole time she stands in the background, literally the whole time he's talking to Ian, and stares at them with the creepiest smile on her face.
No, she is staring at both of them. Yeah, like, she's staring at this crazy smile.
Super creepy. Yes. The entire time they're talking about her.
And like, they do a good job because they blur her out. They don't, that's the, not the focus of it. Yeah. Right. They but do a good job about, not focusing her out of the background, but you can know tell weird. That she is just creepy. Staring at her.
Yeah.
At them.
Yeah. Super, super creepy. And you know, and like we mentioned, she's like freaking out in the middle of the night. She gets up and like duct tapes the door shut so that he trying to get him to stay home from work.
She's like, if you're having such a hard time with the door,
maybe you should stay home.
And he pulls open the door.
And the whole time he's trying to act like it's normal. He's like, nope, I got it.
And then he goes to work. She's like, I made you lunch. So in the beginning of the movie, his cat dies.
Yeah, right at the beginning.
Right, that night, she moves in basically and makes an altar
to the dead cat.
To the dead cat, and he wakes
like,
up.
I thought that you'd like this,
and he wakes up in the morning. Is like sees the altar, and he's like, "What the fuck is this?"
Yeah,
and she's like, "You don't like this?" And he's like, "No, I don't like this. You basically took my dead cat that I cleaned up." Threw away already and brought back in the house.
Yeah.
That would upset me, first of all.
Yeah.
I would be like, what are you doing? Who has to clean this up now?
That would probably be
the first thing in my mind.
So gross.
And then getting back to this, now where we are in the story is he's going to work. She's off that day. And she was like, oh, I made you lunch. Made you
lunch, yeah.
And then you cut to him eating lunch at the store, and he's talking to Sarah, and he's biting into this sandwich, and Sarah's reading it to my little food critic, because he said he wanted to be a food critic.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then he's like, the answer is cat. Something.
It's on the back. She's just like, so what's the verdict or something? And then wrote cat with a question mark, and Sarah's like, what does that mean?
And then he finally gets it. Like, she fed him
the cat.
What do you think cat tastes like?
I don't want to know.
Like, could he not, like, obviously it's like chicken, right? Because he couldn't just pick it out.
The fact that this idiot.
And then he just threw ate up. It.
He just ate it, though, without even questioning it.
Yeah. Without even looking at the sandwich. At
this point in the story, no.
Yeah. I would have been like, no, I'll just pick something up. And then didn't she say, Sarah, she was like, your food smells weird.
Yeah, she said it didn't. Yeah, it smells weird or off or something.
And when you're eating it, wouldn't you be like,
oh. Why would you eat it? I just
like when you pulled it out to eat it, wouldn't you be like, something does smell right off?
Put something in there that was pre-packaged sealed. You should not be eating that, bro.
Yeah. And then when he left for work that day, she stands up, gave him a kiss and everything, and just, with a big smile on it,
creepy.
Her face.
Creepy
and
smile.
Then she just stands there.
The entire day.
And then when he gets home, she's like right in the middle.
Yeah. She's like soiled herself, and I don't know what all happened during the day, but she's disgusting.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be like super creepy? if you came home and you're just like, what the fuck?
And this is like the 10th creepy thing she's done at this point.
Yeah.
And he knows
that something is going on.
Yeah. And everyone's like, she needs therapy. She's having a mental breakdown. You need to help her. But he is just so like, I know it's obsession, right? And it's supposed to be she's obsessed with him. But honestly, he was so obsessed with the idea of dating her that he just ignores all of these incredibly horrific things that are happening.
Absolutely.
With her because he's so selfish. Bear is really a terrible character. Honestly.
Well, I think he wanted to get his way.
Yeah.
Like, damn the consequences. I'm going to get her no matter what.
Ignore and what's happening to her.
If
you know?
He would have just came out in the beginning and said, yeah, I have feelings for you, when she asked, this all could have been avoided.
Yeah, exactly. And it may not have went the way he wanted. She may have been like, I'm not really interested. But then you would have known.
Right. It would have been her.
And, you know, he doesn't know. Like, Sarah seemed perfectly lovely. He was just so into, again, obsessed with Nikki that he may not have realized that Sarah was a better fit for him all along.
I think Sarah would have been the better fit.
It seemed like it.
And you could tell when they went out to the bar, the four of them.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, let me ask you. You couldn't tell that Ian was hooking up with her in the beginning?
I just assumed. Yeah, when that came out later in the film, I just assumed Ian was trying to sabotage it because of something related to that. Either he was actually into Nikki, he was seeing Nikki behind his back, Ian's back, without saying anything. I knew something funky was up.
Absolutely. From the beginning when he's like, oh, I want to date you and blah, blah, blah. I'm thinking Ian is doing something.
Ian wasn't a very good friend either to Bear.
No.
Ian should have just told him.
This is what guys do. Jeremy did it to me once before. In high school, I really liked this girl named Jessica. And we hung out. We were clicking.
Uh-huh.
And then Jeremy swooped in. So I have been there. I've had this happen.
Yeah.
So I think it's a guy thing or an asshole thing. Jeremy's
more of an asshole thing.
Jeremy's an asshole. So
yes, that's how
if you don't know who Jeremy is, I'm doing a podcast about it.
It will eventually come out. Robbie's having to rework some things.
It's what happened to Fred. He's my friend. You could Google this. He shot his dad in the head.
Yeah.
And I've been having to rework it, but it is eventually gonna come out
with Jeremy. So,
but Jeremy is an asshole. So
yes, he is.
But yeah, I've had that happen.
Yeah. But I mean, the film, like, and they did a good job in this in making it like, it's horrifying, but it's funny.
Yeah.
You know, so it's dark humor, laughing at some of the weird stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
Even though it's really terrible. So I think they did do a good job of that. And I always enjoy a dark humor movie.
You said this took 21 days to shoot?
20 days.
20 days to shoot?
I think it was 20 days, yeah.
I mean, for a shoestring budget, I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was one part where Sarah hit him up and was like, I need to tell you things. Nikki was asleep in the bed. He's trying to get out of the bedroom, and Nikki ends up talking to her.
The real
Nikki.
Yeah.
And was like, why don't you just kill me?
Yeah, she's literally begging him, could you please just kill me? And he walks out. And
yeah.
He just leaves her there. Because she's like, don't be too loud because you'll wake her up. Just kill me. Please kill me. And then he just leaves. And I'm like, bro.
So he's sitting in this car with Sarah, right, talking. I guess they start flirting back and forth.
Yeah,
and
I mean, because Sarah is trying to tell. That's when he finds out about Ian. She's like, look, this has been going on for a while. I don't think you know this. And I feel like I should tell you that he's been hooking up with her. And that, you know, and Sarah's been trying to, like, obviously has her own slight agenda because she clearly is into him. But, you know, mentioning like that she had just talked to Nikki the same day that Nikki and Bear hooked up, and that Nikki had said she sees him more like a brother, you know. So she's trying to really say like, this is
super weird.
Strange that you guys are so into each other.
Yeah.
Or she's so into you.
And then all of a sudden, you see out of the corner, this
is great
person bumps into the
it was like the ring.
Passenger like the side ring of the ring
hair over her face.
Yeah, like the hair is covering, yeah. And she runs into the window and breaks it open and takes Sarah and bashes her head into the steering wheel.
It was a brick on the steering
wheel. It was a brick. So it was gross. Brutal like the Terrifier. I told Sammy, you need gross. one kill, like one brutal kill like the Terrifier. Yeah.
And we read they cut that back a little bit to not get an NC-17, so I don't know what the full scene. If you saw it at the film festival, I guess you got to see the whole thing, but they did cut it back for the theater.
The ratings boards
version.
Yeah. What did you say?
Yeah. It was pretty intense though. I was just like, damn.
And then
there goes Sarah.
And then Bear's freaking out, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah.
And Nikki comes over and is like, yes, this is all your fault. But now you gotta help me get rid of the body.
Yep.
I'm like, what in the hell?
Do we even know what happened?
Yeah, she put him in the apartment. They went to the store. But
they went to the store. What did she do with her there? Because
they were going to put him ready. In a trombone box.
Oh, and just hide her in
and
there.
And I don't know where she was going to go. And then she was like,
it's just struggling. I missed that.
Yeah. With the
it's like, what the fuck just happened?
Okay. Oh, they were there trying to get a trombone box to put it in there.
Okay.
And then she was like, well, I got this. Why don't you go home?
Yeah, I know that's not what she really did, because she actually just drugged Sarah back to the apartment like a fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
So.
And so he gets in and she's sitting there naked, dead on a chair.
With no face.
With no face.
Still.
So.
And then Nikki's like trying to look like her, like when she comes out from the depths of hell, wherever she wanders out from in the apartment, you know, she's trying to look like Sarah.
Yes.
At that point. And meanwhile, in between all of this happening, Bear has went back, bought two more of, well, I guess it was the last two of the willows. And he's trying to at one point get Ian to make a wish to undo his wish. He's like, I can't make any more wishes. Please do it. And Ian's just like, this is crazy, whatever. And he wishes for $1 billion, which falls from the sky as soon as he does the wish. So then Bear's like freaking out because he's like, great, you didn't actually help me. And I got to figure out how to make this crazy bitch make a wish so that we can still undo this. Goes back to his house. Ian follows him. Ian, who is a billionaire for like 5 minutes, gets immediately
shot in the head
by her.
Then
look at him. She just bow,
shoots him.
Yeah, that was the end of that. Oh,
I mean, all the things he could have done differently to help, he definitely did not.
Bear is really terrible. And he's told, he calls the helpline at one point, and the helpline is like, well,
Bear calls the helpline trying to say, how can I amend my wish, undo my wish? And
it's
like, we don't really do that as long as you're living.
So, I mean, you could kill yourself.
Your wish will continue. And then he was like, just because the guy on the line wish this upon her doesn't make it any less real. And then the guy on the line was like, it seems like you have a moral obligation to be there for her. And I'm like, now we're talking semantics here. You're like a wizard talking to me about moral obligations. Mm-hmm. How weird is that?
And to kind of get into that, so Curry Barker stated in interviews that the One Wish Willow entities are honest. They don't deliberately manipulate or twist your words like a traditional genie might, or like a monkey's paw.
Or a djinn.
So the goal is not to take what your wish is and turn it into something evil. The horror comes from the fact that Bear literally got exactly what he asked for. Instead of, like, even if he had worded it differently.
How would you have worded it?
Like,
if you were a bear, how would you have worded it?
Like, so he wanted an all-encompassing love that overrode her free will, is basically what he did. But, I mean, Bear is an idiot. I guess, like he should have wished for himself to have the courage to tell her how he feels. That would have been a better wish.
Okay.
Because that's on him. That only affects him.
It doesn't take away her free will.
Put her under a spell or wish that she potentially has feelings that are not real for her.
Well, shouldn't he have wished him to be himself to be more confident?
That's basically what I'm saying. Like to have the courage, the confidence to,
and just not tell just her. In that. Well, like maybe, in general.
Yeah, maybe that would have been a better wish. Something like that. But that's not what he wishes for.
So how would you have worded it? Like if you were in Bear's position, how would you have worded the wish? She said, I want her to love me the most in the whole wide world.
I mean, are we still assuming he's wishing for her to love him?
Yes. How would you have worded it?
I wouldn't have worded it at all because that's really fucked up to even wish that on somebody.
Okay.
Do you have a way you would have worded it to not make it creepy?
You know, I was thinking about that, like in the movie, like how would I have worded this to make sure this didn't happen? But hindsight is always 20/20. And I honestly, I don't think I would have been any better.
I mean,
I don't want this girl to stalk me. I would have put some caveats on it. I probably would have tried to write it down and been like, I don't want this to happen. And I don't want this to happen. Or I don't want this to happen. But this is really what I want to happen. I want her to be the same person, level-headed.
But at the end of the day, if her feelings are not there for you in that way, you are overriding her as a person. Even if the rest of her personality doesn't change and she's not obsessed with you or anything, even if you make it clear that you just want her to feel the same way that you feel about her, you're overriding her free will. And why would you want to be with somebody that you're overriding their free will?
You could tell when they were having sex, right? Where she was just laying there.
It was
just like, this is a doll. Yeah. I wonder how it was, like, actually filming that scene. Like, how the actress got in that headspace.
I don't know. She is insane, though.
It looked like she was just, like, not even into it.
Yeah. Well, because she wasn't. She's, like, that just a creepy shell of a person.
Yeah. So they're saying that the real Nikki was in purgatory, right?
Yeah.
Because when he made the call to customer service, they were like, do you want to talk to her? And she was just screaming and screaming and screaming.
Horrific.
And he hung up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's very daunting.
Yeah.
It's just.
But after that, he has that phone call where he basically is confirmed with whoever.
Customer service
with the one wish willow that the wish he made is true. That Nikki is stuck and screaming, and he still is just like, well, I'm just going to go make it work. Like, Bear's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't there to make her better. He just really wanted
the relationship
to be there. And he even says that a million times in the movie. This is all I've ever wanted. This is all I've ever wanted.
Yeah.
And that's where his intentions were
at. And he just keeps asking her not to be creepy, but I'm like,
you can't do this. You can't do that. You know.
You can't cook the cat.
So Ian invites him to a party.
Mm-hmm.
And is like, it's just a boys' night.
Don't bring her.
Don't bring her. Don't bring Nikki. Well, they're Bear's talking to Nikki. She's in the shower getting dressed. And she's like, well, Sarah called me and was like, oh, I'm going. Mm-hmm. So how about I go? So they're playing this. So she goes to the party. They're playing this drinking game where it's mm-hmm. like Jenga, drunk Jenga or something like that.
It's like giant Jengas, and then you pull out, and then you're supposed to
do the dare, whatever's on there. Yeah. And Bear goes. Well, first, Nikki goes.
I don't even know what Nikki's prompt was.
He does this, like, poem or story.
Very creepy.
And it's like Hansel and Gretel or something. And everybody's just like,
Hansel and Gretel. No, it is just fucking creepy. It's basically about the fact that, you know, if this guy won't be with her, she's going to just peel his skin off and make it into like a makeshift penis.
Is that what she was saying?
Yeah. Like, yeah, it was creepy.
Oh, okay. So it everybody's was very like,
disturbing.
keep in mind, this is at a party. Everybody was vibing. Everybody's having a good time. And then she stands up and does this, and everybody's like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And then she does this. And she's like, oh, it's a new book I'm working on.
Creepy.
You know, and then they're like, oh, Bear, it's your turn. So he pulls this thing out, this Jenga cube out, and he's like, kiss the girl to the left. Kiss the person, to the left. Yeah. To the left of you. Mm-hmm. And it happened to be Sarah.
Yes.
Well, Nikki got super pissed.
And she doesn't even say anything.
She just wanders over. She's on the other side of the couch.
She
just
very aggressively
wanders over, yeah. Stands behind Nikki.
Stands behind Sarah.
Sarah. Pulls her chair out, moves in front of her, and so Bear can kiss her.
Yeah.
Very creepily, though.
Yeah.
And then she's like, nobody in the world will know how important it is that I love you or some shit like that.
Basically, no one's going to have a love like ours. None of you will ever know.
And everybody's just kind of like, okay.
That's nice.
And people were like trying to sit by her. Nikki, oh, I want to sit by Nikki. And then all this is happening. And the guy to the right of her, like, moved over an inch.
Yeah, no one wanted to be in
And I was Nikki. Like, yep, that's pretty normal.
Yeah.
So that was pretty funny.
Yeah, and then, she has to leave the party because then she breaks the bottle and starts hitting herself in the face.
Yeah, she's like, and Bear's just sitting there like.
And everyone's like, Bear, you have to take her
and he's just hospital. Sitting there. And then they go to the hospital and.
I don't know what happened.
Like,
they wouldn't take her.
Yeah, the hospital's like, no. Is that what you think happened?
I don't know what happened, to be honest with you. But, whoever was at the hospital didn't seem like they were going to take her in.
I'm surprised that they didn't take her to put her in a psychiatric hold.
I don't know. We didn't get to hear the dialogue, so I don't know.
But they were definitely at the emergency room, and the doctor came out, or an intake person came out, and they were like, no. And then the next time it cuts, and they're just in the kitchen. Like, why did you hit yourself, Fur? Mm-hmm. And she has, like, blood coming down.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting movie. So, at the end of this movie, Sammy was alluding to this, that he did stop and get two of the wishing willows. And Ian fucks up one.
Right.
And then he was in the bathroom with Nikki. And while he's in the bathroom, because in the movie, they were like, well, as long as you're living.
She's stuck.
You're stuck. So he goes in there and he's like, puts his, he takes the gun.
He's too much of a pussy to shoot himself.
So
when he
came into the house, Nikki shot Ian.
Right.
He took the gun away from her and put it in his pocket, goes in the bathroom, and you see him stick it in his mouth, right? And he's like, okay, I'm gonna shoot myself. And the music gets high, the tension gets high, and you're like, here it comes. And then he pusses out to doing that. Then he goes to the medicine cabinet and takes all these pills that his cat took in the beginning. That's how the cat died. So he's swallowing all these pills. Do you think he took enough of it to die, honestly? So
it was oxycodone. So
the way he did it, I was like, that has to be a terrible taste. Like in my mind, I'm just like, that would be a terrible taste. Mm-hmm. And so he swallows this and then he's like, okay, I'm good. And then he tries to puke it up. And then you hear the Wishing Willow box open because when you open it, there's music playing and he comes out of the bathroom and you see it broken. Nikki made a wish.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they're looking at each other, and then they go to the couch, and then Bear dies. Like, he has...
Well, Bear, so you hear the wish, right?
Right.
Well, we don't hear what she says, but we know she does something with it. And, at that point, he's starting to try and vomit back up the pills, because, again, Bear is an awful person.
That was in the bathroom.
And is... just, whatever. And he stops, and then he just, like, rushes out and runs to her and kisses her.
Right.
Like, everything is fine and perfect. So that leads you to wonder what
The wish was.
The wish was. Was it that he would just give in to her obsession and just be okay with everything she's doing and not be upset? Because he was clearly upset with her.
Clearly. He was pissed at her.
Like, was that the wish? I mean, we don't know what the wish was.
You can clearly tell that it was broken and she made a wish. And I was telling Sammy, I was like, I wonder what she wished for. And then Bear, like, has a seizure and dies.
Yeah, just and like his cat.
And she is like, Nikki's like having this panic attack and everything like that. And so she's going to take the gun and shoot herself. But before she does that, she's free. Like, the demon, like, she has like an exorcist and mm-hmm. now she's good. But Nikki's just literally sitting there like crying, like, what the fuck is going and on
that's,
here?
That's how we get into the credits.
Is and that's how it ends. Like, you can literally listen to her crying through the credits.
Yeah, for a couple minutes, and then it eventually stops, but yeah.
And then we were looking this movie up, and Sammy was saying the next movie the mm-hmm. producer does is going to be in the same universe, and there's going to be a news clip saying, woman was convicted of triple homicide.
Or arrested for a triple homicide. Yeah.
So it seems like that Nikki is going to get blamed
for
these murders, which rightfully so. I mean, how are you going to explain this away?
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know, because that implies, I think, that the next movie is going to take place right around the same time frame as this. So maybe we can just hope that Nikki is able to
make a brief cameo. Make
it seem like it was really Bear who did all those things.
I wonder if they're going to try to tie her into it.
I don't know. She did such a good job in this. I could see them trying to bring her in somehow.
So let me ask you this question. Like, the movie industry was going through a lull at this point in time when these movies came out. We're talking about Obsession. We're talking about Backrooms. All these filmmakers are coming from YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think Hollywood could learn from this?
I mean, do original stories, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the moral of the story. I mean, Devil Wears Prada 2, I'm assuming, did very well.
Yes. Because everybody wanted a sequel.
To do it,
everybody wanted to see what the continuation was.
But overall, I mean, just stop doing remakes and, you know, do something that's an original story, which is what this is.
And I said Backrooms. Blum was a part of it. That's actually A24.
Oh, okay.
So that's A24. And then
they released
it. And this is Blumhouse for Obsession. So I wanted to correct that.
But that's why people are seeing movies from Neon and A24 is because they're doing things that are unique. I mean, A24 and Neon both wanted this movie, but obviously they didn't have the money, probably like Focus Features did. But, you know, people are going to the movies to see unique stories.
Yes.
I think that's what they're looking for, not just remakes or retellings of the same thing over and over again.
And people say, like, production was down in Hollywood. Instead of shooting in Hollywood, people would go to, like, Atlanta to shoot there, or they'd go overseas, or, mm-hmm. you know. And this is coming where it's a resurgence, where they're trying to bring back production to Hollywood, basically.
Yeah, didn't we just say that The Mandalorian was shot in California?
Yes.
They got a tax break.
They got a tax break to like $25 million.
Yeah, so.
So that, I think there is going to be a resurgence, but I think broadly, people are saying YouTube is the new studio because Netflix is competing with YouTube.
If we look at, things just have changed, right? When you look at I don't even know if I want to use the term celebrity, but, you know, you have like the influencers and stuff. I don't even want to say just influencers, but TikTok, right? People, unknown, regular people who are funny or creative or interesting now can build a following on TikTok. It's a different world. So now you can have, you can have YouTubers making films that people want to see because there's a good way for people to get the information and know what they're working on, what the story's about, like to be exposed to it, I guess, is where I'm trying to go with it. In a way that's not just, you know, back in the day, like the 90s, the only way you were exposed to what was coming is the trailers,
yeah,
and ads, right, for movies. But now, you know, these YouTubers can promote it on their YouTube channel. Hey, I did a movie. Here's some behind the scenes stuff. This is what the movie's about. And people watch it because they're on social media so much.
So you think we're moving past the time of celebrities because everybody can be a celebrity?
Doesn't it feel like that? I mean, they're inviting some of these people to like red carpets now.
You mean the influencers?
Yeah, to like the Oscars and stuff. Like they're on the red carpets.
Okay.
Which is confusing to me, but also clearly integrating them into Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, right? I mean, Hollywood was going through a lull. I mean, jobs were out. I think after the strike, it just didn't snap back. Like you lost so many jobs to shooting in the United Kingdoms and all these other places that were actually going to get give these tax breaks. Mm-hmm. So that's why Netflix is building a studio in New Jersey, because mm-hmm. New Jersey was willing to give tax breaks,
right,
tax incentives. So I think California, I know they just passed a bill saying they were going to give more incentives. I know Florida just passed a bill that they were giving like mom and pop production companies tax incentives.
Really? Wow.
So
everyone wants a piece of it.
Yeah.
Because they know there's big money. Because if they come in to film something that's jobs, you
catering.
Know, it's temporary jobs, but I mean, it is jobs for locals who will be booked, yeah, to do catering, even background people
yeah.
coming in. Local people who can work on the set themselves. I mean,
you have all the below the line people, scripts, yeah. studio, or set designers. That's what I'm thinking. Set designers, caterers,
yeah.
Electricians, you name it. They're doing it. Designers, everything.
Yeah. There's all these, economy boosting.
If you're on set, if you're shooting a movie for 3 to 6 months, that mm-hmm. helps a city out.
Right.
That's what happens when Netflix or one of these big production companies makes a movie. They're not coming in there for weeks. They're coming in there months. And the trailers are the first thing to drop.
Because right. even though they might only film for X number of days, there's a lot of people already there because you have to find the locations. You have to build sets. Yeah.
Scout locations.
Yeah. Scout wardrobe, whatever it may be. Like there's a lot of people who come in early too.
Yeah. The electricians usually come in and the grips and everything.
Yeah. So those people are now integrated into the local economy because they're getting local things. They're making purchases. They're eating at local places. I mean, it's all kind of tied in together. So,
yeah. So it's big business. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you think that's why people are more gravitating towards these original films is because they're tired of the remakes, the superheroes, whatever's.
I think so, because part of Hollywood is just like not really in touch with the regular people.
No, you know? I agree.
And what they're looking for, or what they value in a film anymore, I think.
Yeah, I think Hollywood has been, they don't really know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand, because when you're ahead of a studio, you don't want to put out the money for this, that, and the other, because you don't know if it's going to get the money back. Mm-hmm. So I understand where they're coming from, but I think they're losing people at the box office.
Well, and look at this movie. I mean, obviously, they still spent a lot of money, right? That's more money than a lot of people will ever see. $750,000. But let's just look at the basics of the movie. The wardrobe, the setting, whatever. You know, this guy did not live in a fancy house, which how many movies do we watch where, you know,
look,
it's one thing when you got, you know, a Meryl Streep playing, you know, in The Devil Wears Prada. Like, you expect her to be lavish. You want to see that, right?
Right.
But, you know, we've got so many movies out there, whether it's in theaters, Netflix, whatever, where the people just have very fancy homes. And it's like, how would they afford that? Most people don't live like that. So this guy lives in a, you know, tchotchke filled house that his grandmother owned. You know, he works at a music store. It's not a fancy job.
Yes.
When he's bringing, we'll ignore the cat part of the lunch, but when he brought his lunch, you know, it's just a simple sandwich. It was nothing fancy. It's basics like that. So I feel like for this movie too, like a lot of it was not relatable because what the fuck, but just the sets, the way they dressed them, the characters, it was more relatable. They're out at this loud bar, just hanging out.
Exactly.
I feel like the setting was much more people could relate to, generally speaking, their lives, which I think is another draw.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know, it's one thing when you go to, like, we just saw Star Wars, right? Another planet, a whole nother world. That's a whole nother thing. You want to be drawn into the fantasy. But sometimes when you're seeing a movie like this, like, I don't need him to live in some fancy, like, sky rise apartment.
Right.
That wouldn't make sense. But that's what Hollywood does half the time because they can.
Yeah. So would you see this movie again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would definitely watch this movie again. It was funny. Gross for sure, but it was funny.
We probably
how weird it was.
Missed some things when we were watching it at theater, so yeah. I would watch it again.
This is when I feel like you would pick up just more and more
to
things.
See what I missed the last time.
Yeah, so. It was just really well done. We even read about them having to kind of work with limited lighting, and so they would use makeup to make some of the Nikki,
look
creepiness
darker.
Kind of elevated with makeup instead of just using lighting alone. And it worked. I think that was really well done.
What would you rate this movie?
I would give this a good solid, like, 9.5.
Okay.
What would you give it?
Yeah, I'd probably give it the same way. Yeah. 9, 10.
I really enjoyed it.
I mean, it's a great story, indie movie. I liked the backstory. I liked the actual story. It did not lag at all. You didn't look at your watch and you're like, oh, when is this going to get done?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we watched the other most recent independent movie we saw was In a Violent Nature.
We all know how we feel about that
and
one.
That was just, I was like, this could be a short.
If it was 30 minutes, 45 minutes, I feel like we would have been.
We would have enjoyed that.
Maybe we should rewatch it and just fast forward a bunch of it. And then see if you like
it. We were just at a con and somebody dressed like him. And I was like, did you really enjoy that movie? And they're like,
dressed like it.
I mean, I was like, don't you think it could have been a short? He was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, no, I agree with that.
That's the problem is if we watch it on like 2 speed, maybe it'd be better.
Yeah.
We should try it and see if we like it better.
We'll see. We'll
rewatch
see.
Of In I know they're, Nature on 1.5 speed.
I know they're making another one.
They are.
So.
I don't know if I can go to theaters.
I mean, good for him. Good for the actor. But I guess it wasn't our thing.
No. Yeah, good for you for getting a sequel. Jobs, right? Good for the main guy, Bravo, the director, writer. But I don't think we'll be seeing that movie.
No.
Sorry.
But yeah. This was Obsession.
Yes.
So tell us what you think of it.
Did you like it?
Did you dislike it? Did you dislike how it ended? Because I'm hearing a lot how people are like, I'm pissed on how it ended for Nikki.
What did you expect?
He was like, they messed up that girl's life. And
they
were like,
I'm up her life
so
forever.
Upset for her.
You should be. He ruined her life and he got his other friends killed. I mean,
because he couldn't say that he liked a girl.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with the ending because that's what I would expect. Nikki can't have a normal life now.
Because she's going to be in prison.
Potentially. Like I said, I hope there's some way, and we'll probably never know, unless the director, you know, comes back to it. But I hope there's some way that it can be turned around and her lawyers can figure out a way to make it unclear that she did it and maybe blame Bear for it. And Bear's dead, right? So who cares at this point if he gets blamed?
I think they could easily turn this
Bear
into a sequel.
And Bear was at all the everything.
You right? can blame it on him.
House, so.
Bear's house. He was at every scene, everything. like a good forensic person could be like, oh, definitely have a jury trial. Because I don't think they could convict her without a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I hope in my version, Nikki escapes it, but I think she's still fucked up for life. So I don't know how much of a quality of life she's going to have.
If she doesn't need therapy now, she will need it after this. She
certainly does at this point. Yes. Yeah.
So, All right, guys, let us know what you think about this.
Yeah.
Remember, subscribe to limitlessbroadcastingnetwork.com. Because the more more people subscribe, the better programming we can offer you.
Yes.
We can go out and shoot projects like this. So let us know. Remember, everybody's entitled to one good scare. And we will see you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is part of Limitless Broadcasting Network. Check out our website for information about the hosts, merch, and all of our podcasts. Today's episode was produced by Robbie and Sammy Brooksby. Remember, the things you hear in the dark are usually just the beginning. Until next time, stay spooky.
I'm Albert Parker, and I'm excited to introduce my new podcast series, Hollywood Hustle, available exclusively on the Limitless Broadcasting Network. But first, let me ask you, are you into entertainment? Movies, TV shows, theatrical releases? If you said yes, then you're going to love what we have in store. Hollywood Hustle, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by Limitless Broadcasting Network, is a unique blend of business insights, news, and entertainment. In this series, we delve into the financial underpinnings and business deals that keep Hollywood thriving. Want to understand who really runs Hollywood? Follow the money with us. We'll explore intriguing topics like the rise of the 60-second microdrama and the recent cancellation of Jimmy Kimmel Live, dissecting the business decisions behind these events. Plus, we'll tackle the current struggles of Hollywood films at the box office and what that means for the economics of the industry. If any of this piques your interest, don't miss out. Subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com for early access to episodes, all ad-free. I'm Albert Parker from 1950 Studios and Limitless Broadcasting Network, and I invite you to tune in and subscribe to Hollywood Hustle now.